Welcome to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information that we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Our hosts are Reverend Radio Ray Razor and Charles Charlie Crawford. Welcome, gentlemen.
Well, hello, hello. This is CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. I am your host, Reverend Ray Razor, and co-host, Mr. Charlie Crawford. And Charlie, we always want to start with dogging me around, where we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a guide dog. Well, let me go first and say what the good has been for me. With this virus and everybody staying in, they had a survey saying, you know, people going to come out of this either fat, either crazy. Either divorce or some of those things, and thank goodness for my dog, Miss Raven, that I'm going to come out a little bit not as fat as I might have, because you have a service dog, you have to take them out a couple of times a day, at least a couple of times a day, so that gives me exercise, and so that's a good thing to have in Raven. And also, I was listening this month, I don't know, Charlie, if you heard it yet, the monthly Juno walk, organization that puts out, GDY puts out, and their guest was a lady talking about exercising your dog, and she had some demonstrations and all, and I say at least once every 2 weeks I'm going to teach a Raven some new exercise that I'm going to work on, and that's for to keep the, you know, help get the dog to help and stuff like that. So that's a good for me. I don't have a bad or ugly. So what you have for us, Charlie? What's your experience?
Well, actually, I'm just this is my ninth dog, as you know, and so Raisin is a very good dog, and I don't really have any complaints about her except. You know, right now, neither one of us are getting enough exercise, and maybe I can cure that. Maybe I can cure that in the next couple of weeks, you know. So
right,
I shouldn't say
right.
that with Becky Barnes Davidson is going to be on, because then she'll know.
Yeah, because they're just muted. They're not, it's not that they can't hear what we're talking about now, I guess. But anyway, so that's for the good, the bad, the ugly of it. But as we get out more, they talking about loosening up some of the regulations, if you want to call it, or the stay-in-home order, you'll hear more about some of the situations we deal with our guide dog. But the two most things that I get as guide dog users, and you'll hear later on the show, is about guide dogs, is that the two basic things that the guide dog users, we're always ambassadors of trying to get accommodation for our dogs to be able to access public places, and sometimes we can squeeze in some people private places, but also the protection of our dogs. And we'll talk about that more and more throughout the different shows. But we're going to ask Ms. Renee, our announcer, if she can give us our lineup for this week.
I sure can. Well, our first guest is Patrick Sheehan. He's a longtime federal IT employee and a tireless advocate for transportation that impacts persons who are blind and visually impaired. And he describes his volunteering at the American Council of the Blind as a way to level the playing field. And then we'll start our second half with Charlie's Corner. And after that, we will be joined by Becky Davidson from Guiding Eyes, Inc., one of 11 accredited guide dog schools. And today she will take us behind the scenes of that 66-year-old institution and tell us about training dogs to assist the blind and marathon dogs, dogs that are trained to run with their handlers. Okay, so back over to you guys.
All right, thank you. Again, you're listening to CAGDU about your dog and you. And our guest on a our guest is going to be distinguished. You know, then this gentleman, I got a little bone to pick with this fella, Charlie, that we're getting ready to bring up. Because, you know, us being blind, we always have to ask people what people look like, right? And so I asked my wife, I say, well, what that past chin look like? She say, oh, you talking about that cutie? Oh, he's a cutie. I heard what? I say, no wonder that dude get the jobs he get and always get all up hearing about Pat Sheehan this and Pat Sheehan that and say, oh yeah, he dressed real nice too. But that is so important though when you're out in public, especially when you have a disability. People don't expect us to look nice, they don't expect us to be well groomed. So we want to say and introduce to our group and welcome Mr. Pat Sheehan. How you doing, Pat?
Hey, I'm doing really good today, and I would just say that I don't think it's very good of your wife to be lying to the Reverend about my good looks, but so I guess you'll have to take that up with her, you know. But I am real pleased to be here, and I have done. I'm not quite sure what you guys want to talk about, but I'm really happy to be on this show with both of you. I've known Charlie for about 25 years, and you know, I've been working in the area of IT accessibility through Department of Veterans Affairs, and working for about 25 or so years with Metro on transportation access issues. And as a matter of fact, been working
before you get too much into that, Pat, because when I'm listening to shows sometimes and I hear a person come on, let tell us a little bit about yourself and where you from. How you, did you become blind because you was attractive and was some woman's husband or some husband woman or something? So tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right, be happy to. Grew up in a family of six from Massachusetts, came down here in 1976 when I got a job with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Worked for them for 12 years. Lost my sight at the age of 31, so I was driving and all this kind of stuff early on. Was actually carrying, well, it's interesting. It did involve a woman, but actually I was carrying the back end of her couch. She was moving from D.C. to Chicago with her boyfriend, and I was carrying the back end of a couch and had a tree branch he went past hit me in the eye, and that caused retina detachment. And so that was back in 1981, and I had pretty good vision when I came back to Washington, D.C. after that. But vision has deteriorated over time, and so, you know, I'm using screen readers and all this audio technology and trying to get figure out how to use my television with audio description and all those kinds of things. So, but it's an interesting world. We have a lot more going on now. And, you know, the access that we're getting in terms of technology, in terms of, you know, TV, entertainment, all that stuff is great.
Let me just get this understanding for people to understand. So are you totally blind? Because when you say technology, people don't know if you're using you know, a screen reader with enhanced JAWS and stuff, or are you totally blind? What are you using?
I've got some usable vision, very little. Enough to get in trouble and not enough to get out of it, you know. So, yeah, I can get lost in parking lots. I can get lost in who knows where, you know. So, yeah, very interesting areas. But you know, the retinas are still attached, and so I've got some usable vision, and that's helpful. But I do.
So how did you get involved in the technology? How did you get involved in the technology?
Oh, I started way back in 1988, moved from FBI over to Department of Veterans Affairs, started training with the old JAWS and the old DOS platform, moving into Windows, and started out as a trainer. And worked with Susan Bowes, who's in Silver Spring also, and we worked teaching veterans how to use this technology and people within the Department of Veterans Affairs, and then moved from there into this what's called Section 508, which mandates that technology that we're producing in the federal government be accessible to people with disabilities. So my real job is I've got like 35 contractors and 25 people, and my job is to hire smart people and let them do their work and build a good team. And that's what I do. I manage a very smart team that's smarter than I am and let them do their thing. It's a lot of fun.
And some of those persons have disabilities or are blind or –
So
right.
we have a part of the team is totally blind, working with sighted people to test applications and websites and documents and that sort of thing for accessibility. We've hired, 10, 12, 15 people, maybe it's 20. And one of the things that, within the group that we've hired, we've got expertise in the Braille and JAWS and large print and Dragon and all that kind of stuff. So, and they're some of our best workers and smartest people. And there's a lot of back and forth that goes on between those folks and the customers and those folks and our, sighted staff, non-disabled staff. Mm-hmm. So it's great. It's very good interface and a lot of learning going back and forth.
Okay, now Charlie, you've been kicking around with this fellow for 25 years, and there's some things you probably want to ask him. You was hesitant, but now you got him on the high seat. Go ahead, Charlie.
Well, I gotta say, there have been times when I have been truly impressed with the range of knowledge that comes from Mr. Sheehan. And one of those times was when I think someone was trying to use, I believe it was a PowerPoint program or something like that. And Pat said, F5, just remember F5. And so they pressed F5 and wouldn't you know it, the thing started talking real well. Now, how did he know that? Well, I imagine after all these years, you pick up a fair amount of knowledge. But Pat's best attribute, as far as I have been able to observe, is that he remembers a lot of stuff. And so when it's appropriate to mention something, he does. And that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Now is your head still... So same size, fatter, or fatter?
Yeah, there you go, Charlie. I know you put me down, Charlie. I remember when Charlie Crawford was coming down from Massachusetts coming down as the executive director for ACB. We had just our little local chapter of NCAC in Silver Spring. We weren't having good attendance and all that kind of stuff, and we had just decided to go from monthly meetings to quarterly meetings. And here comes Charlie, coming down from Massachusetts to be ACB's executive director. And he said, I like to have monthly meetings. So we had to scramble back in our little group and say, hey, it doesn't look good for the executive director to be coming down to Silver Spring and us be closing shop. I said, come on, we got to move this thing together. So, yeah, we had to scramble. And we did a good job. We've got a good
now,
fun
you hear
group,
the,
as you know.
You hear the music,
yeah.
So we're getting ready to go to break. But one of the reasons we have you on, Mr. Sheehan, for two reasons. One, that you, the new president of the Silver Springs chapter in Montgomery County, and you probably have one of the chapters that have as many guide dogs as you do members there. So we're going to talk about that when we come back on the other side of the break.
You have been listening to CAGZU, About Your Dog and You, Capital Area Dog Guide Users, located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. That's CAGZU, C-A-G-D-U, 2020, at gmail.com, or give us a call at 301-263-7371. Back to you, fellas.
All righty. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Miss Renee, our hostess with the mostest. And we, this is CAGZU, About Your Dog and You. I'm your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and Mr. Charlie Crawford, and our special guest on this historic day, I would say, because everybody's celebrating May the 8th, 2020, 75 years ago, when Europe and all of those folks decided they had enough fighting and kicking people around. So anyway, you can look all that up on your computers now as our guest that's an experienced AT person. But and the reason we have Mr. Pat Sheehan, because not only he is kind enough to let CAGZU meet after his meeting, where he is the president of the chapter. So he's going to tell us a little bit about ACV, what's his role as a president, what's the philosophy of ACV, and where they're looking to go this year. And he can also mention about, I guess, with this virus going around, there would probably not be a physical of a couple of thousand blind people invading Chicago or Illinois this year. So, Mr. Sheehan, talk to us a little bit about ACB, your role as president, and what's the future for ACB as you see it.
Well, thank you very much, Ray. So, I am the president of the local chapter in Silver Spring, Maryland, National Capital Area Chapter of the American Council of the Blind of Maryland. I'm also on the board of directors for the national organization. I've been on the board now, I think it's been about 5 or 6 years, have a few more years to go. And as board member, we work on different initiatives, and one of the things that we decided to do this year was to hold a virtual convention through, I think we're going to be doing that mostly through ACB Radio and also using some Zoom sessions. The latest that I've heard is that we've got a whole bunch of sessions lined up, probably close to 100 sessions, and I think we're going to have a very full convention. So it should be very interesting. I think it's challenging for us to put it on. We haven't done it before. This is the first time. I think we're going to get a lot more people involved in attending the sessions. I think the sessions are going to be very interesting. I'm working right now on a session that deals with the future of paratransit and the future of rural transportation, with an individual out in South Dakota and the challenges that they have. So areas like environmental access, which Becky Davidson is working on with me and a bunch of other people, and transportation. Those are all areas that affect not only us on a national level with the American Council of the Blind, but also locally. You talk about the fact that we've got a fairly active chapter with a lot of guide dog users and all. One of the challenges that we see is in the area of transportation, things like sidewalk conditions, the bikes that want to zoom down in these bike lanes that we don't know they're coming. Recently, I know Charlie and others have had these floating bus stops that appear out in the middle of the street. How do you navigate them? How do you navigate and find those safely with if you've got a cane like I do, or you have you're using a guide dog so that you're not walking out into the middle of the street? all of those concerns are safety concerns, and those are some of the things that we deal with to make access to the environment safe, and so that you can use things like the fixed route system, bus and rail, and all that kind of stuff. Those are some of the key things that we're focused on, trying to improve. Ray, as you and I have talked about, transportation in Prince George's County, making sure that you've got increased buses, that you've got more access to subway systems, you know, that they're taking areas like Prince George's County that we've been looking at for years, and making sure that they have the adequate transportation so that you can get from point A to point B and don't have to use just paratransit to get from here to there.
Now Charlie can ask you a question, but because I know you and Charlie served together on a transportation committee. Is that right, Charlie? And you go take it, Charlie.
Yes. Well, we serve on the AAC, which is the Accessibility Advisory Committee to the Board of the Metropolitan Washington Transit Authority. And so all those metro signs we see all around the county and the and Washington and all that, that's all part of what Metro is all about. And the board makes all the decisions relative to what things going to happen. And our job on the AAC is to provide a disability perspective as to what needs to be done on Metro to make sure that the service really services people with disabilities appropriately. And so there's three basic components of it. It's the big committee, that's everything. Pat is the previous chair of, but still continues in a major role with the organization. And I'm also on the, and Pat too is on the Metro Access Advisory Committee, subcommittee, because we think that's really important. And there's a lot of things happening with Metro Access that people need to know about. For example, there's the whole new fleet of vehicles that's going to happen over the next couple of years.
Oh, praise the Lord! Praise the Lord! Okay.
And they're even designing new vehicles to accommodate the needs and desires of various people with disabilities. So I'm looking forward to see what happens with that, because it's an important thing. And Pat also said,
I was going to say, Charlie, and one of the key things that you bring to the table, of course, is the fact that you have a guide dog, so that when we're looking to see whether we have sufficient areas in the train car to put your guide dog underneath the seat, or in the priority seats or whatever, same thing on the vehicles. And so it's critical that you take a look at that, and that people with disabilities are involved in the decision making. You know, one of the things that we started off with was leveling the playing field, whether it's technology or transportation, vehicles, paratransit vehicles. You know, these are the kinds of things that individuals like Charlie do to get in and advise Metro before they make the decision to procure. Hey, this is going to work, this is not going to work. And in the past, I know that we've talked to drivers, whether it's cab drivers using the Abilities Ride format or Metro Access. This is a guide dog. This is not a pet. You know, this is what the behavior that we're expecting, and that sort of thing. So it's teamwork.
Well, Pat and Charlie, since I both have y'all on, and y'all are on this advisory board of this paratransit, I'm going to ask you a question that thousands of people with disabilities say. Do do the people that's on the board with a disability have any input in designing these vehicles, or is it just that these contracts are given to somebody's brother, sister, mother, or family member? Because if y'all don't do anything else, please make it where we don't have to bend down to get on the van. So can both of y'all answer that?
You're exactly right, Ray. I'll start off with. We have coming up, and we just actually we covered this last month, and we're going to cover it again. Requirements for access to those vehicles, with better seats, better suspension, the ability to go up a ramp, rather than have to take the stairs, the ability to clear the door so that you're not banging your head on the door. And I'll just say this, and then let Charlie talk to it also. Years ago, when I first started back in 1990 on the advisory committee, we weren't at a point where we were even talking to the WMATA board, and now we are. We weren't asked about procurements before they happened. You know, it was just like, here it is, what do you think? And now we're consulted before a procurement is made, whether it's going to be vehicles that we're going to use to, you know, that we're going to use along with the fleet, abilities ride, what the vehicles look like, different things like that. So we're right in the thick of things, and, you know, we're there because we want to work with Metro and whoever else to make the best decisions possible. And, of course, if there are any issues or problems, you know, Charlie's the one that made the major decision, so you'd have to blame him, right, Charlie?
Give us your spin, Charlie, on that.
Well, I'm not going to drive the vehicle. That's one good thing. the other thing is that I don't bring my dog to the table. My dog brings me to the table. But the thing about the design of the vehicle, it is important that Metro listen to the needs as expressed by people with disabilities as to what they want. And to the extent that they can get it, Metro is working to try and do that. And so we know that they're going to have probably vehicles that will be able to carry two wheelchair users as opposed to just one. And and they're going to have, the seating arrangement's going to be such that the seats will be more comfortable, and there will be the ability of people to just get into the vehicle more easily. And so all of these things are important, and even things like shading on the window so that people can look out the window without getting glare and all that. All that stuff is being trying to be programmed into it. So I'm looking forward to a good time with regards to the new vehicles. Also, Metro Access is moving towards having more sedans and taxis and Ubers and Lyfts and the rest of them to the extent that we can possibly accommodate them as workers with Metro. We can utilize their services and have people be able to ride. If they don't need to use a van, then they'll be able to take advantage of one of these vehicles. So the whole system is getting better.
Okay, well, we're up against it, and we want to thank you, Mr. Pat Sheen, for being our special guest. We will have you on again. And, Pat, do you have a contact information? We know right now people not meeting physically, and do you all have a website?
I do have my own contact information. I can give you my cell number at 301-922-2995. If there are questions, concerns, or anything that you want to ask me concerning blindness issues or that sort of thing, IT issues, questions about audio description, any of those things, those are areas that I work in and enjoy being involved in, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
All right.
And we're putting together a website.
Okay, well, thank you, and we will put, with your permission and your board's permission, we'll put your contact information on CAGDU.org website, and this show will be put on our website that you can listen to it later. Thank you very much, Pat Sheehan, and have a beautiful weekend.
I enjoyed it, sir. That was great fun. Thank you, and Charlie. Appreciate it.
All righty. We'll see y'all on the other side of our station break. This is Reverend Ray and Charlie Crawford.
You've been listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. Capital area dog guide users are located here in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. CAGDU2020@gmail.com. That's CAGDU2020@gmail.com. Or you can give us a call at 301-263-7371. Again, that's 301-263-7371. Or visit our website, CAGDU.org. That's CAGDU.org. And we want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they have it. They have a store-to-door delivery in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. Big Bad Wolf, 202-747-3434. Back over to you guys.
All right. Thank you, Miss Renee. This is CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. And we heard here twice a month now. We heard here the second and the fourth Friday of the month from 3 to 4:30 p.m., and that is East Coast time. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. My co-host is Mr. Charlie Crawford. And it's time for Charlie's Corner. And Charlie Crawford, it's Mr. Charlie C. bringing you information for the DMV. Take it away, Mr. Charlie.
Well, thank you, Reverend Ray. And I have to go back to my corner again? Oh, my goodness. Anyway.
We spoke to your wife.
Uh-oh. Well, now, during these times of everybody has to stay at home, I mean, and part of the problem that people are experiencing is, what do I do with all my time? And you all remember that back in the day when you went to work or you went out and did things, the day got a little crowded. But nowadays it seems like there's more time for lots of stuff to do. Well, anyway, I have noticed that there are some things that people can begin to get involved with. And if you have a smartphone, you can listen to a lot of TV shows or movies. I've been listening to Star Trek Discovery, and I'm on episode 11 right now. Oh, I think there's 18 of them, so in the third season. But anyway, the point is that a lot of interesting stuff is out there if you can access it, and it's important to figure that out. Now, I want to give you folks a tip or two as to where you might be able to go. First thing you might want to check out is a place called www.audiovault. It's AUDIO, V as in Victory, OLT.net. AudioVault.net is a complete library of described audio files, ranging from movies, television shows, and all kinds of stuff that you might want to check out. And you can download stuff from there or even listen to it free without having to worry about it from the site. And I'm very enthusiastic about it. And I've already downloaded all the Star Trek episodes.
No.
The old Star Trek and the three new ones. So as you can see, I'm going to have a lot of fun in outer space while we're waiting for this whole situation to clear up. But anyway, I thought introduce a bit of levity for Charlie's Corner this week, and we'll be back next time with a little more serious stuff.
All righty. Thank you, Charlie. So that's Mr. Charlie C. with information for the DMV. Miss Renee, would you introduce our guest, please?
Absolutely. Well, we are joined by Becky Davidson from Guiding Eyes, Inc., one of 11 accredited guide dog schools. Now, these dogs are not available from Amazon, so she is here to take us behind the scenes of the 66-year-old Guiding Eyes and tell us about training dogs to assist persons who are blind and the remarkable marathon dogs, dogs that are trained to run with their handlers. Welcome, Becky.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yes. Welcome, 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 Miss Becky. Oh, wow.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, Mr. Charlie, talk to Miss Becky a little bit. Tell us why you think she was going to be good for our show here today.
Well, I have known Becky Barnes Davidson for a number of years, and she is a stellar representative of the Guiding Eyes School, Dog Guide School, and she has been someone who has been able to give information both about the school and about people's rights and giving good advice on how to deal with issues that come up with guide dogs over the many years that I have known her. So it's a privilege to have you, Becky, on the program. And
thank you.
You're welcome. I'd love to ask the first question. And marathon dogs? I've never run the Boston Marathon, but maybe this time.
Me either, nor do I intend to. Let me just explain. The program is called the Running Guide Program, and intent was and remains to train people to run, train a person and a dog to be able to run together for primarily training purposes. To ask a dog to run 26 miles is probably not a fair thing to ask a dog. But the idea is the dog and the person are matched as a guide dog team first. Being trained as a guide dog is the priority. But once they're trained and settled as a guide dog team, then if the dog has shown promise as a dog that would like to run, and they figure that out during the training process before they're even matched with the student, then when someone applies for the Running Guides program, we know which dogs are, you know, ready to run and would also be a good match for them. The marathon thing, our CEO, Thomas Panik, did a remarkable thing at the New York Marathon last year. We had three dogs run with him over the course of the marathon. They split it up into three parts. So that, you know, that, like I say, asking a dog to run a 26-mile marathon is asking a lot. Could it happen? We don't encourage it, but it certainly is helpful to have a dog run with you if you're training for a marathon, and shorter races are definitely a possibility.
Mm. Wow.
Becky,
wow.
May I ask a question?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay,
sure.
I'm not very good about getting up and running. Do you have any dogs that are trained that will come get me out of bed, encourage me to get dressed, and to run just a little ways?
Well, your dog will probably get you out of bed if it's hungry enough. And then that stuff in the middle, that might be asking a little bit much. But, hey, you know, you get up and go out and walk with your dog. I do that every morning, and I know, you know, we all do that. And Ray mentioned that that's helping us avoid the COVID-15.
Becky, let me ask you this.
Now it's COVID-15.
And the introduction would say 11 credit day to schools, and I know there's many, many more schools than that. So tell us a little history about your school, how it came to be, and what your philosophy and where y'all look at and what's going on now with this virus shutdown of most of the country.
Yeah. Well, Guiding Eyes was founded in 1954, and we graduated our first guide dog team in 1956. We have our own breeding program. We breed our own dogs. We have a whole cavalry of just totally committed volunteer puppy raisers. We basically, our training is basically, as most of the schools are now, positive reinforcement. We genuinely believe that a guide dog can provide independence and confidence to a blind individual who chooses to use one. Guiding Eyes is a member of the International Guide Dog Federation. That's why that's the accrediting organization for guide dog schools around the world who choose to join it. There are, I don't know how many there schools are in the InFed now. Last I heard it was like around 90. It's probably more. They are developing around the world, mostly in Europe and the U.S. and Canada. We're starting to see a little bit more happening in South America. There's guide dog schools in South Korea and Japan and Israel. So, you know, you can imagine. And there are more than 11 in the U.S., I think, but not a whole lot. Not a whole lot more.
Well, let me ask this, because I know Charlie get to talk to you all the time. But why are there growing more guide dog schools? Is that many people becoming blind? Are they out there fighting? They're not in wars like they used to? I mean, why is there such a need for more guide dog schools?
You know, the waiting list for all of the guide dog schools here and certainly around the world, the waiting lists are long. It takes time to breed and raise and train a dog to be matched with a blind person. And, you know, as more and more people learn about how great a guide dog can be, they start being interested in wanting to apply. So there are long waiting lists everywhere. And as I think we all know, in terms of need, the baby boomers are aging. And with aging can come vision loss. And so there's that whole generation of people who, you know, who might ultimately want to use a guide dog. In Israel, a lot of it did have to do with wars, but now, you know, they're way ahead of the game in Israel, too.
That's an interesting point to bring up.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Okay. About aging and blindness. I mean, part of the problem with folks is that, you know, you get a little slower as you get a little older, and at the same time, you still want to have a guide dog. And does Guiding Eyes do anything to assist people as they go older?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Our goal is to create a safe and effective guide dog team, and dogs vary as much as people do in terms of their speed and their. As one of the things that you measure with guide dog work is the pull and the harness handle, those things, and you certainly recognize as people age, their needs are going to change, and so then you work to match them with the correct dog, and we certainly do outreach to people who are aging. We have no upper age limit as long as a person is active enough to give the dog a job to do and to take care of it and be responsible for it. So we've trained people in their 80s successfully.
We're gonna go. That's some music. We're gonna go to a short ID, and when we come back, Becky, I would like you to give us what the day in a student and training, what they go through from the time of the morning to the evening, what you all look to achieve.
Okay.
You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, located in the nation's capital. Back to our guest.
All righty. You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You, and it is sponsored and brought to you by Capital Area Guide Dog Users, Inc. And please check us out on our website. You'll get all the information as we get ready to close out. So back to our guest from Guiding Eyes. So, Ms. Becky, so tell us, what is it like in a day of a student receiving a guide dog?
Okay, well, first of all, let me tell you that we have both residential training and home training. So what I'm going to tell you about is what it's like to be in class and what your day is like. You get up, you get awakened at 6 in the morning. You take your dog out to relieve. You feed it. You take it back out to relieve. Then you can get yourself ready. We then go and do obedience work with our dog, have breakfast, and then pile into a van to go to our training lounge in White Plains, which offers us a much broader range of types of environments to work with dogs in. We have lunch there. You'll do two routes during the day, one in the morning and one in the afternoon. Then you return to Guiding Eyes. You take care of feeding and relieving your dog. Then we have lecture. And then that usually takes 45 minutes or so. And then dinner. And then after dinner, if there are things you specifically want to work on with an instructor, you can have that opportunity. There's a lot of free time after dinner. There are occasional special programs that might happen. I don't know if we still do, but we used to have a chair yoga class in the evenings for people who wanted it. We teach people how to do dog massage one evening. And, you know, just different things. There's a lot of people sit around and talk about their technology and play with it and teach each other technology stuff. So that's kind of cool. So that's kind of what the day is like. Residential training is about 3 weeks. And
okay.
Home training, because it's one-on-one, it's generally 7 to 10 days for somebody who's had dogs before from Guiding Eyes, and it 2 weeks for someone who's new. We don't encourage home training for people who are getting their first guide dog, but sometimes circumstances, you know, are such that a person really can't be away from home for any number of reasons. And then I would just like to mention, because I know Renee had asked about this, we have an accelerated program for people that are retrained from Guiding Eyes, and that's you come in a week later and work with a separate instructor, and then you finish up in your home area. We also have a specialized training program that assists people who are blind but who have some additional challenges that we need to have a dog accommodate for, and that might be something like cerebral palsy, which really varies a lot in how it impacts a person. Muscular dystrophy. We do have a deafblind training program. And basically the dogs that are trained in that program are picked for a person, and then they have extra training to accommodate. It might be somebody has a really unusual gait as they're walking, and the dog needs to accommodate for that, or for balance, or, you know, any number of things like that.
Now, in terms of the training for the dogs itself, now how long is it with a puppy raised a family, and then how long does a trainer give us his formal training?
Formal training is generally 4 to 6 months once the dog is determined, ready to go for training.
Yeah.
So about 4 to 6 months from when they're determined, ready to go for training, and then to when they're matched. The specialized training dogs, it'll be longer.
Okay. Now, Becky, how did you decide to become walking around with dogs and hanging out with dogs all day long? What brought you to that as a trainer?
Well, I'm not a trainer. So,
okay, but as involved.
You should probably
tell us.
I'm a blind kid.
Okay. Now we didn't know that. Now we got to do a part two. We took for granted. Okay, apologize. So, tell us then. You're blind and you work as what then?
I do consumer outreach and graduate support services.
So you have a dog.
Oh yeah.
So you had a dog for 4 years. Oh, okay. Well, we should have started off asking you about you and who you are and everything. Mr. Charlie, we're going to have to work on that. So how long so this is your fourth dog. How long have you had a dog? When did you get your first dog and speed it up?
I was a late bloomer. I got my first dog in 25 years ago, actually, this past January. And I've been blind all my life, but I didn't get my first dog until I was in my 40s. So if you want to do the math, go ahead. So I'm 58 now. Yeah.
So how you end up with a job with Guiding Eyes?
Well, once I got my first dog, I was real intrigued with the organization and an opportunity. I was working up in Western New York as a civil servant, and the opportunity came up for a job opening, and I applied for it, and they hired me. So I've been there 21 years, it'll be.
Wow. That is very, very interesting. And in terms of now, is the school closed, open, or how are you all handling your services?
The school is open, but everybody's working from home, and all the dogs are in foster homes, either with instructors or puppy raisers or volunteers, so that there's nobody actually on the campus except an occasional maintenance person or someone picking up mail or things like that. So we're all working remotely. Which means that, you know, we're talking to graduates, we're talking to applicants, we're, you know, working on slowly reentering as a workforce. But as we all know, it's a process and it's going to take time and it's a slow process, but it needs to be a safe process that really takes into account people's concerns as well as their safety and their health.
Now, you're located in New York, correct?
Guiding Eyes is. I actually live in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, really? Okay, Guiding Eyes is located in New York. Okay, which are their Governor Cuomo
County.
Had.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, Governor Cuomo had become one of my favorite people. So then, how do you? So if you living down in Charlotte, which is one of my favorite places, you're not commuting back and forth. So how do you get a paycheck from a Guiding Eyes?
It's all technology. I do a lot when we were open. I was doing a lot of traveling to conferences and things like that, representing Guiding Eyes. But between the computer and the phone, we're able to make it work.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to point out for people that's blind, that you, if you have the right blind skills and training and AT, you can get a job. All right, Charlie. Charlie, questions you have for Miss Becky that you knew was blind, had a guide dog, and was working in Charlotte? Go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay, Charlie, you can come out of your corner now.
Yeah, right.
That was a good one, Becky.
Speaking of coming out of corners, Becky's involvement in the world is much larger than just working at a guide dog school. She is also a person who is involved with various committees with the American Council of the Blind, and she works on the built environment to help make sure the environment is appropriate for those of us that are blind. Excuse me. And you want to talk about that a little bit, Becky?
Yeah, well, Pat mentioned it. I was listening, and Pat mentioned the Environment Access Committee, of which he's also a member. He's also great to work with and very, very wise and very positive, I might add. But basically, you know, what he said about concerns that we all have about pedestrian safety and accessibility. Pedestrian safety in terms of how we get around in our communities and accessibility of just the built environment, whether it's indoors or outdoors. And that's what we focus on the Environmental Access Committee.
Now, would you say that the environment's more or less, I don't want to use the word dangerous, but for lack of a better word, dangerous or hazardous right now, is it more of a challenge to get around than it used to be?
Well, there's so many, you know, it changes all the time. And there are so many different types of intersection design. One of the things I know Charlie and Pat talk about a lot are the floating bus stops. That's a fairly new development. E-scooters and e-bikes and quiet things that you don't hear coming up behind you. Roundabouts, which are not designed for pedestrians, a lack of accessible pedestrian signals. I mean, this could be a whole show in itself. You could have Pat and I on as a panel, and we could keep it going for an hour.
which we might do. But so we're up against the time, and we want to thank you, Becky, very much now, since we know that you are blind. We know you have a dog. so thank you very much. No, he won't. And we're going to link our website as a link to Guiding Eyes, a website for those can get information about your school. And we thank you very, very much. And what's the name of your dog? And what kind of dog you have?
My dog is a yellow lab. Her name is Ballad, like a song, which is appropriate for me because I'm a folk singer. And she'll be 3 in July.
All right. Thank you very much. You've been listening to Gag Duel about your dog and you. Our time is up. We thank you for your time. Until the next time, this is Reverend Radio Ray Razor and my co-host, Mr. Charlie Crawford. And we always, like you say, remember, hug your honey, but pet your pup.
You have been listening to CAGU, About Your Dog and You. Capital area dog guide users are located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every other Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com. That's cagdu2020@gmail.com. Or give us a call at 301-263-7371. That's 301-263-7371. Or visit our website, cagdu.org, cagdu.org. We thank you for listening, and we'll see you here next week.